Hey, what's going on? Greetings and good day. Welcome back to Birds All Day. It is a very exciting time to be a fan of the Toronto Blue Jays. It's a very exciting time because we got one thing for you this week, and that is transactions. We're coming to you a little bit early because of the trade deadline. So you're gonna get this show earlier in the week than you would have. But you will probably notice that we didn't do a show last week, and that's something that Stoughton and I talked about. Stoughton and I talked about whether or not we should have done a show last week because that was right in the middle of all the Wildcat strikes, all of the players withholding their labor, trying to effect positive change, trying to influence the powerful people that own sports franchises, that own the television broadcasters, and really trying to make a true impact. And I don't know, we weren't sure if it was the right thing to do a show or not. I mean, these are not things that we've typically shy away from talking about, but this really felt like a different kind of moment. I think the Milwaukee Bucks were among the first teams to declare that they weren't going to play. They were going on what is, it was not necessarily dubbed a wildcat strike, but that's exactly what it was. It wasn't a union sanctioned strike. It was not union wide. But these players decided they weren't going to play, that they wanted to affect some change. They wanted to sit at the table and have some real conversations and see if the power of people who love and profit from sports cannot help them to seek justice where it is sorely lacking, across, the United States and Canada. And, again, I don't want to speak for Stoughton. He's here. We'll bring him in, but I'm sure that he would echo my sentiment and say that we support that. We support those players, and we support their decisions to try to do what they can and pull the levers that they have, in an attempt to try to make the world a slightly less shitty place for even a day. And then, of course, it started in basketball, where there's been a lot of talk about social justice. There's been a lot of whitewashing, so to speak, of some of the social justice terms about the ability for the players to speak out and express themselves and try to use the platform, as we hear a lot. But baseball was a little bit slower, a little bit a step behind, and maybe a day late, a dollar short. But it happened. The Blue Jays, unfortunately for them, they were on the field when some of this work action started to happen in the NBA. So they weren't able to take action that day. And the following day, the Blue Jays didn't play, mostly, I think, because the Red Sox had said they weren't going to play. And the Blue Jays made statements supporting it. And then, of course, these things stopped becoming maybe the same kind of work action as there were a lot of more negotiations and a lot of things being done on in a more open way, as opposed to being like, no, we're just not going to play today. And the Mets and Marlins, I think, was the one that really stuck out for me, because I don't think that there was an understanding that that was going to happen, that the players weren't going to play that day, but they went on the field and then they walked off and they put the Black Lives Matter t-shirt right on home plate. And it was really, really a powerful moment. So with all that being said, I think that it was, you know, we talk about things like this on this show, and I appreciate the people who reached out and said that they wished maybe we had done a show last week. I think that I'm comfortable in our decision to not. But somebody said something that really stuck with me, and they said, look, there are lots of Blue Jays podcasts, and if they wanted to hear folks just talk about ball, there's no lack of places to find that. But we don't talk about just baseball on the show. And so if you're listening to us because of that, thank you. We salute you. And these are so crucial, and they're bigger than baseball. They're bigger than sports. They're bigger than two middle-aged white guys talking about things that are important to people who are more than just us. But it means a lot that someone seeks that from us, and that we are not just blowing smoke up each other's asses every week. Which is what we usually do, but when we're not talking about baseball stuff. So thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you to the players who made a difference and were trying to make a difference, who brought, some powerful folks to the table, and who are, I know in the state of Wisconsin at the very least, moving forward, legislation, doing things that are more than just a logo on a jersey or a superimposed, slogan on a court. So, again, a really interesting and powerful week, something that, again, I don't think that any of us expected to see from baseball, but we did. And we wish maybe the Blue Jays, I don't know what we wish with the Blue Jays players to be done. We can't tell them what we want them to do, but it was just a really powerful week. And I think that it was the right thing for us to take a break. And now we're back here today and ready to talk about transactions, about your playoff hopeful Toronto Blue Jays. So as I said, Stoughton's here. I will bring him in. Stoughton, I don't mean to steal the thunder. If there's anything you wanted to say, please take the time and do so now.
No. That was very well said on your part. So I don't feel the need to add anything to it. I just entirely agree.
Awesome. So yeah, the Blue Jays, the Toronto Blue Jays. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but they look pretty like a team that's going to be in the playoffs this year, given the new structure. So there are, of course, three divisions in the American League, and as I understand it, there'll be two teams from each division and then two wild card selections added to the mix.
It's a lot of teams.
It's a lot of teams, but the American League, bless its ignorant soul, is full of garbage teams. Teams that cannot even hold on for even a moment to a 500 record, which leaves your Toronto Blue Jays, resurgent, huge, very good thing.
Yeah.
Three or four games over 500 Blue Jays are in the catbird seat when it comes to the playoffs, which is, we haven't even really talked about it because it's, I don't know, I'm having a hard time computing. They've only played like 30 games, but there's like less than 30 left. So here we go. Blue Jays, playoffs, let's go.
Yeah, pretty much that. I mean, there are, I'm looking at the standings right now, there are eight American League teams with a positive run differential. They are one of them. That's really the whole difference between who's a playoff team and who's not. The Tigers are sort of hanging around. They're the Jays' next closest competition as we speak. Detroit's 16-16. The Jays are 18-15. The Tigers are terrible. Like they didn't, you know, sell everybody this this week at the trade deadline or over the weekend or here on Monday when we're recording this. But they damn well could have because they're not a baseball team. They could not possibly catch the juggernaut that is your Toronto Blue Jays, right? So you know, you can't put your feet up, but it really does feel like their future is in their hands, by which I mean their ability to, you know, go get swept by Oakland in early October is in their hands.
They have look swept by Oakland is we would joke, and all, so I think this is going to kind of inform the rest of our conversation. Two things, which is bless the Tigers. The Tigers were so bad last year, and the Tigers they've started to bring up some of their top prospects, but they also signed some guys, right? They signed, who was it? CJ Cron they signed, Jonathan Scope. Like they didn't just roll over and run out the worst possible lineup that they could. I think they signed Cron, but I don't think he played. Didn't he go to like play overseas or something like that? But anyway, they at least signed Scope. And that was before all of the COVID that shut down the league. So they released being like, let's not try to make, we win a few more games than last year. And bless them, they are. But they are truly awful. Like you said, they're not a good team. They have a very strikingly bad run differential, which, again, the Blue Jays are positive. The Tigers are significantly negative. So, again, it's not theirs to have. But there aren't any real threats to it at this point. And the other thing I was going to say, even before all of these transactions here at the transaction deadline, the Blue Jays aren't as good as Oakland. They're not as good as the Rays. They're not as good as the Twins. But I wouldn't want to play them in a short series, especially if I'm a good team. I wouldn't want anything to do with the Toronto Blue Jays.
No, because, really, really not.
Because you get Ryu, who has pitched very well after a slow start to this goofy season, and that's no fun. And then you have a bullpen that goes for days, and if you can maybe cobble like put Nate Pearson back together again, or you know, any of these guys, you can run a bunch of these.
Taiwan Walker's pitching.
Oh, you got Taiwan Walker now, which of course we'll get to him, but that's no fun. And the Blue Jays can score runs and runs and runs, and they can hit home runs, and you know, all you got to do is get them running the bases or trying to catch the ball, and maybe you'll be okay. But if you can keep the game to its absolute most elemental, if you're the Blue Jays, you got a shot. You're in there with a puncher's chance, I think, is what I would say. No matter who they play, boom, boom, puncher's chance.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely true.
So they traded for a bunch of guys since last we spoke. So you've mentioned one of them already. Let's start it off. Taiwan Walker acquired for, I believe it was just a player to be named later, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
From the Seattle Mariners, which, of course, was the, I think it was the original team that drafted Walker, who is something of a post-hype prospect now, who was a top prospect for the longest time, had a really difficult time kind of putting it together for an entire campaign, I believe, at least, who showed flashes of greatness and then was pitching really well this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think he got hurt too. Is the other thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're right, and then he kind of started to get it together in Seattle, and then got hurt. I know he missed most of. I think he pitched like one inning last year. But yeah, he pitched very well in his first start with the Jays. Said that he didn't have his best stuff, and that he was kind of, you know, searching for his curveball, which wasn't good, and his changeup he wasn't real happy with, and yet he still managed to like. Just not allow good contact at all. I mean, granted, it was the Orioles. Didn't strike out a ton of guys, but, you know, just, looked the part of a guy who can do all that this team needs their starting pitcher to do and win a ballgame, which is, you know, maybe pitch into the damn seventh inning.
If that, even pitch into the sixth, give them five innings and you apparently are ahead at the game. But there is quite a bit to like. You're right about him being hurt. He's only made 10 starts since 2017, after the 2017 season. So, really battled, struggled to stay healthy. A guy who is a free agent at the end of the year. So very much a rental player, but a rental player that comes at a low acquisition cost. Not as low as the Mariners. They signed him for nothing. He was a free agent when I guess he was non-tendered or something by Arizona. And I think this is what we're going to continue to see through the deals that the Blue Jays have made here in the last week or so, is that they seem to recognize where they are in the pecking order, and that making the playoffs and winning more games than they lose is a nice touch. But they don't seem in any way interested to mortgage the future for an uncertain present and near present. Is that fair to say?
I think that's entirely fair to say. Yeah, and I don't think that the Padres mortgaged the future, but they obviously gave up a lot more talent than the Blue Jays did, and they're in a different position. But it's interesting, the dynamic, because, you know, how much of an improvement if you're the Rays or the Yankees or, you know, or Oakland or any of the other contending teams? Like, you know, Ross Stripling maybe doesn't move the needle for a lot of teams, but it does for the Blue Jays. And that
does
wasn't,
it?
You know,
hold on.
Well, okay, we'll get to him. Taiwan Walker certainly does. I mean, I think anybody could have used him, and that was interesting to me that the Jays ended up, you know, paying the price to get him. I think Jim Bowden said, or somebody said, that it was it's going to be a top 20 or top 30 prospect, like 20 to 30 range kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
I had somebody suggested to me that they knew, and I'm not sure, you know, what to make of that, but because they're not like in the Jays organization or anyone else, but they're a little plugged in. But suggested Will Robertson is perhaps a guy who, you know, my immediate thought was, yeah, that sounds familiar. Who the fuck is he? And I think he's a second rounder from 2019, which would be not a shocking move based on sort of the track record. I know the Jays, you know, they moved JD or JB Woodhouse for the Alemis Diaz deal, I believe, who was very, you know, very recently a high pick. They just moved Griffin Conine today as well in their deal with for Jonathan Villar, who's maybe an even better prospect than Robertson, if that even is who it is. But I mean, these are the kind of guys that we're talking about. We're not really talking about the crown jewels of the system. And it's interesting, like, as I was saying, you know, with that these guys, you know, Jonathan Villar helps the Blue Jays. I know he could help, but they kind of are we're in that spot where they are bad enough that they need enhancements of their floor, but still good enough to be in a playoff position. Whereas a lot of the other contenders, I think, were like, well, this guy might not help us enough to be worth, you know, giving up anything for. But I think you got to commend the Jays for that. You know, go out and get better.
I do too. And I think that what we as people who do this job and folks who are like plugged in fans, I feel like even though people love to still hug prospects, even after they're gone, such that when a guy who may have been like at a great distance from the big leagues, say they're a top 20, top 30 prospect, and then they get traded, and then somehow they kind of like percolate up to the big leagues, all the finger pointing starts.
This is the Edward Olivares
thing. Exactly. Like, just let it go. Yeah, they traded him. He wasn't even a top 20 prospect of theirs. Maybe they misread his talent. Maybe he improved. Maybe the Padres and he were able to click and it helped to make him a better ball player. Let it go.
Or maybe they pushed him in so that they could use him to get Trevor Rosenthal and send him to Kansas City.
Whatever it is,
which is what happened.
Just let it go. If a guy 2-3 years down the road turns into a piece, unless it was like a clear case of malpractice and just absolute professional foolishness, you know, let it go. If Edward Olivares or whatever, is that his name, Olivares? If he makes it to the big leagues, good for him. Good for him. Good for the Padres. Player development success. Thing I've said on this show before in the old days and in the new days, you want people to believe in your player development as well. You don't want to have these guys be, I don't know, paper tigers or like a kind of, they look good on paper and they put up a gaudy stat line in low A, and then you trade them and then they fizzle out. Then people think that you're the Rays who are just like snake oil and kind of selling, giving you, you know, three dime, you know, two dimes for a quarter sort of thing. You just, if the players that the Blue Jays trade, if they're good, if they get better and move on, that's good. That's good for the Blue Jays. That's good for the organization because it demonstrates that their player development system can and does work. So take it as a W, even if the trade that they made initially was underwhelming, if it was for Yenger Solarte or whoever it was. What deal was Edgar?
That was Olivares, yep.
That was for Solarte?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were trying to put a professional player on the field at the big league level. They were trying to improve the product.
Oh, something that they've done this week by jettisoning Brandon Drury and adding some professional players. Your Rays thing just reminded me, because I saw somebody retweeted earlier of the Sam Miller tweet. Just love this trade for the Rays. Who'd they give up? Who'd they get?
Yeah, exactly.
Fuckers.
And I've said it, you know, the Rays, I curse them. I curse their very existence. But they have something where they bring guys in and they tend to be good when they're here. And then they tend not to be as great when they leave. So what is it that they're doing down there other than giving them all kinds of wild illegal drugs? So Taiwan Walker is like probably, but other than VR, we'll move to VR now. So Taiwan Walker, I would say stands to be or has the potential to be an actual upgrade on what they have on the floor of their starters. Jonathan VR is a guy that if the Jays had wanted, they could have signed. He was a free agent in the offseason. They could have signed him just like everybody else could. Instead, he had to settle for Miami, or perhaps he chose to go to Miami because who wouldn't? If you want to live in Miami, that's a good place to do that.
That's the best place to live if you want to live in Miami.
I can't think of any other better, frankly. But VR is a guy that maybe didn't fit in the Blue Jays' plans in the winter, but now...
Well, when you have Brandon Drury, you obviously have to get him at bats.
You got to fit... Well, also at the time, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was the third baseman.
Also true, yeah.
And Bo Bichette was the shortstop, and Kevin Biggio and Brandon Drury and whomever else, Santiago Espinal, could be playing shortstop and plugging in other holes elsewhere. And then the reality of the season set has become such that you don't have a third baseman that's very good these days because Travis Shaw is not great. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was not in any shape to play third base, so he's moved to first. And even though he is shaping up and swinging a very, very hot bat and looks like the Vlad Guerrero Jr., the prince that was promised, he looks like his OPS going into today's game was almost identical to his OPS at this point exactly 1 year ago when he was riding high. Then he kind of ran out of gas. Fingers crossed, doesn't happen again. But the reality of the situation was they have a need now. They have a need to raise the floor a little bit. They've been given too much playing time to Joe Panik, who's cooked. They gave so much playing time to Brandon Drury. They were like done with all of this. And then they've got, now they're playing Panik at shortstop because Bichette's hurt again. So you need a guy like VR who A, can play some infield positions. I don't know that he is especially good at any of them.
No. I think that's correct, yeah.
But the bar is low. And I think that he's attractive because he can run the bases like a fucking maniac, which apparently somebody, their name escapes me as they cover the Marlins. So I guess the belief was that VR didn't fit with the culture because they found him to be a reckless ball player. Which, here, take my money. Have it all, Jonathan VR. This is what we do around here. This is how this works.
You play Craig Mish, by the way. Craig Mish.
Craig Mish?
Yeah.
Mish, Craig Mish. You play like your hair's on fire. and you take needless, reckless chances on the bases, which if we could pause the transaction talk, do we want to like really quickly kind of arbitrate the game today and this decision, the Gurriel trying to score in the 11th inning with the, would have been the tying run.
Sure.
Your opinions on that? So, of course, if you haven't seen Monday's game, the Blue Jays played in the afternoon against the Orioles, and having fallen behind in the 10th inning, they had plated one run. They went into the 11th. They were down 4-2. They plated one run. It was 4-3. And then I'm not sure if Gurriel was on first or second, but there
he was on first.
He was on first.
Yeah.
So Rowdy Tellez released a line drive into the right field kind of corner, and Anthony Santander sort of ran over and fielded it, and he recognized that Gurriel was probably going to try to score. So he kind of like heaved it into the infield, and it went to first base where there was nobody standing. So Luis Rivera made the decision to send Lourdes Gurriel home, where he was a dead duck because Jose Iglesias did his best Derek Jeter impression and ran across the infield and grabbed that errant throw that was going to nobody and fired a strike because Jose Iglesias is a brilliant defensive shortstop. And then Gurriel was up by a mile. What do you think? You have problems with this play? You good with this?
I really don't know. I'm fine with it. I mean, obviously on this podcast, I'm not going to get shouted down by preaching conservative base running, but I was totally fine with it. I'd have to rewatch it to see the brilliance of Iglesias there. It couldn't possibly hold a candle to Jeter. I mean, that play, they're still talking about it 20 years ago, 20 years later. I mean, that must've been something
to Jeter's credit. Jose Iglesias was much further away and had to make a much better throw. So,
but yeah, I don't know. I'm all for it. Get aggressive.
I'm not going to be critical of aggressive base running. The throw from Santander from right field was awful and to nobody. And I think the only problem was that Gurriel did not expect to be sent. And yeah. It didn't look like he was like really at full trot when he came around third base. Seemed a little taken aback, may have not taken a great route as he was kind of cruising into third base, which maybe you want to put on Gurriel for not playing hard every, you know, second of every game. And then, or in this game, I should say. But I don't know.
I believe Richard Griffin, who the Jays PR guy doing some PR for his coaches, had a tweet that basically laid it out that way. I just said there's no winning for Luis Rivera because he should have sent him, but Gurriel was slowing up as he came into third, or was not at top speed as he came into third, and that was probably what the issue was, which I think is what you just said. Yeah.
The bigger point is, and then we'll move back to the transaction talk, is the Blue Jays don't have a lot of speed. They have Teoscar Hernandez, who's a very fast runner, frankly. And has stolen, I believe, 5 bases this year, to his credit. Bo Bichette is a good and fleet runner when he's on the field. And again, a player who plays very aggressively. But other than that, there aren't a lot of fast guys who can make things. Well, Grichuk, I guess, is fine. Guys who can like make things happen with their feet. The rest of the
Blue Jays. I think that's a key difference. Because VR is pretty much in the middle of the pack in terms of sprint speed.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at his StatCast numbers. Which is down. He was, you know, he was more to the above average side. I think he's in the 72nd percentile last year. This year, that's down. But also, that could be part of, you know, an attempt to maybe fit into the Marlins culture of not being reckless. Who knows? But yeah. So, nonetheless, you know, even with a sprint speed at that rate, of the 72nd percentile or whatever it was. Last year, he still managed to steal 40 bases. I mean, he was caught 9 times. But he's out there trying, and he's picking his spots well enough, despite not being like a Billy Hamilton. So, yeah, the Jays could use guys like that who even if they're not, you know, true burners, do know how to actually run the bases. And I was writing about this, and I tweeted about it a bit. VR's base running, you know, runs above average, you know, that you can get from Fangraphs. It's the component of WAR, which I think has, you know, weighted stolen base runs and you know, jumps and taking extra bases, all sort of compounded into it. He was the big league leader last year. And, given that he was caught 9 times, you know, which is not that bad, but you know, given that there's obviously, I think, other stuff that that went into that, which would indicate that yes, he is a good base runner and he is going to take extra bases and he is going to not just cruise into third and then tumble into the plate dead by like fucking 10 feet.
He stole 60 bases a few years ago. 60 in 1 year. I can't even, I'm not going to look it up now, but I would struggle to think of the last time a Blue Jay stole 40 as he did. I guess Rajay Davis probably got pretty close to that back, you know, not that long ago. But it's just a different element that they don't necessarily have. Bichette runs bases pretty well, but Kevin Biggio is as everyone loves to fall over themselves describing Kevin Biggio as such a heady ball player, seems to like take the craft seriously and like grab, we'll swipe a bag or two here or there. But it's just nice to have that, a guy who's not having a great year at the plate, but VR isn't, of course. But again, he doesn't have to be the best player in the league. He has to be better than the other options out there. And considering how many at-bats they've given to Panic and Drury and even, you know, Travis Shaw, any upgrade is an upgrade. And it's just a matter for me of just like lengthening the lineup a little bit more and not having so many black holes, because they still do have a couple.
I wrote about it today. I wrote about all the transactions the Blue Jays made here on deadline day. And I sort of likened it to, even though there's obvious differences, a little bit like Ben Revere, which is a move I didn't like at the time in 2015. But he's a guy who, you know, doesn't have the weighted runs created plus isn't great, but he hits for average and he does get on base a little bit. The power this year, especially, maybe just because he's in Miami, has not been there the way it was last year. Or any year of his career. So maybe a move to Buffalo will help him in that regard. But yeah, he's a guy who derives his value from other places and allows them in the much the same way as Revere to not just have a hilariously inept combo of players going out there every day and making fools of themselves at a defensive position, which I believe is basically, you know, what the hell is his name? I know they were playing Colabello in left a lot in 2015. Mm. And
they had Ryan Goins out there a little bit back in those days.
I think so, yeah. And who was the guy who they let go on waivers? Who got in a fight?
Oh, Danny Valencia.
Country? Danny Valencia, that's right, yeah. Not hits okay, but not an outfielder.
Not a fun guy to be around, especially if you are one of his teammates. I will update it. I did look. Rajay Davis, in fact, stole 45 and 46 bases in consecutive seasons for your Toronto Blue Jays. So an element they haven't had since 2013, when last that many bags were swiped. Jose Reyes stole 30 in 2014. Remember when Jose Reyes? Kevin Pillar stole 25 bases in 2015. That's got to be a mistake. All right, our sponsor today, Manscaped, has you covered to keep the hair looking nice and trimmed and feeling fully supported. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. Look, this is something that we don't talk about often, but it's something that just got to get done sometimes. And let me tell you, the premium Lawnmower 3.0 is waterproof. It includes an LED light and is made with advanced skin-safe trademark technology, which reduces nicks and cuts on your delicates, I guess is what I should say. You can get this trimmer inside their Perfect Package 3.0, which also includes the Manscaped Cropped Preserver Ball Deodorant and the Crop Reviver Ball Toning Spray. All words I'm actually saying out loud. Both super practical and they smell great too. Plus, for a limited time, when you order the Perfect Package Kit, you get two free gifts, the Shed Travel Bag and the Manscaped Anti-Chafing Boxer Briefs. The Boxer Briefs have optimal temperature control with their crop cooling technology while keeping your pride and joy supported. Waistband is super elastic to reduce chafing and rubbing. You gotta try these out for yourself. If you want to do that, you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC20, all one word, at manscaped.com. So again, get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC20 at manscaped.com. Use that code from the moose to the caboose. Always use the right tools for the job. So speaking of exhausting all options, and then another transaction the Blue Jays made was Daniel Vogelback, a very big and thick boy is what Dan Vogelback is. He is a chonky one. There was a lot of jokes been made about the Blue Jays offensive line with like between Rowdy Tellez and Vlad and Vogelback and Tanner Roark and even Hyunjin Ryu. They got some big fellas in the mix.
Got another one on the taxi squad now too.
Oh, that's right. They added Alejandro Kirk to the taxi squad. So here's the thing about Dan Vogelback. My guy has not really had a great success at hitting big league pitching.
That's true.
He's really having a rough go this year. And he played a lot last year. He was almost an everyday player, and he did a lot of the things
he was like an all-star last year.
An all-star?
And then I think he just completely collapsed in the second half.
He hit 30 home runs to his credit.
He also played for the Mariners, who I'm not sure how many other all-star caliber players he might have been teammates with. I'm pretty sure I've heard people say that. I'm certainly not remembering it from watching the goddamn All-Star game.
And wait, oh, is this Dan Vogelback's time to shine? yeah. But yeah, he's there, a guy who likes to draw a walk. He hasn't like struck out a lot this year, but he just seems like another one who kind of ticks a couple boxes and doesn't cost anything to acquire.
I think that's, yeah, and also won't cost anything to lose either, right?
That's very important.
Yeah.
Don't let go lightly. But like
got a plate appearance in the All-Star game too.
What good does he do, really?
Saw five pitches.
Bless him. Then, worked a count.
And then flew out.
What, I guess the question I have is, what does Vogelback do that Rowdy Tellez doesn't?
Sees five pitches in a plate appearance? I don't know. That's a great question, and that was the guy that I think a lot of people, myself included, pointed to when the Vogelback move. I keep saying Bach. I don't know why.
Too much Football Manager.
Because yeah, perhaps that's what it is. Anyway, sorry. Now I'm thinking about my my left back situation. but no, maybe it's, I don't think that they would do it solely just to push Rowdy, but they just had nothing on the bench at all. Right. Especially when Drury was around, they could use an extra lefty. They could use a guy who, like you say, takes a couple boxes. He'll actually, work the count, and maybe they'll catch lightning in a bottle. That seems to obviously be their MO, here at the straight. They're like, why don't we get guys who were good before, but suck now? See if we can fix them, and then we got a month. We're probably in the playoffs anyway. Maybe it'll help. And I kind of think it's a thing like that, but it's going to be hard to see him getting a ton of playing time, especially if Rowdy, takes this for the signal that I think it is, and is like, oh man, yeah, maybe I can't take this for granted. Not that I don't think he was, but It doesn't hurt sometimes to have a little bit of competition, and Rowdy had none.
No, that's not unfair. I mean, Rowdy's in that way, the competition is when you think about it within the current roster as it's constructed, the competition is, Travis Shaw and then maybe Vlad, right? Where it's like are you fighting for first base and DH plate appearances against those guys, and as they've made these other moves, that maybe that makes Vogelback less viable, because now it's like, okay, well, we don't have to. I mean, he did come up in the game today that we spoke about before. He did in fact draw a walk. I was in the gym, but it seemed like that plate appearance that Vogelback had about three different strike threes from where I was standing. I was like, oh, I can't believe this is still going on. but yeah, maybe he can draw a walk, but that's not really Rowdy's strength. Not something he's shown a lot of in the big leagues anyway, is the ability to work at bat like that. But he has, in fact, I'm surprised to see this, Rowdy Tellez's strikeout rate. What, if you had to guess, I'm going to throw it out to you here. I'm going to put you on the spot. What percentage of plate appearances does Rowdy Tellez strike out in this year?
I looked at it recently, so it's kind of like cheating, but I feel it is lower than you would think. It's like fucking 16 or 18 or something?
It's stupid just like under that. 18. He didn't strike out today, so it went to like 17.5%, which is like below league average, which is not the vibe that you get. His walk rate is probably right at or slightly mm-hmm. above league average. So, you know, not the worst thing in the world. He is maybe on his way to becoming more of a three true outcomes kind of guy. If he's able to like up that walk rate a little bit, but he's got ridiculous power, right? There's no doubting Telez's power. He has hit tape measure shots and, what do they call that? Light tower power. He's got that for sure, which so does Vogelbach. And Vogelbach is obviously fun to cheer for a thick boy like that. So, I don't know. Like you said, catch lightning in a bottle. If you need someone to go up there and work on that bat, you need someone to get up there and see if you can either, if you're going to willing to walk him or groove one that he can crush. Not the worst thing in the world, like you said, in this bit of a laboratory September, as the Blue Jays sort of figure out where they are and what it's going to take to just keep winning, win one more game than you lose a week.
Right, and like I mean, Rowdy can be optioned, and Vogelbach can be released, right? So they're not real strongly committed to either of them. They obviously have a spot for them, but. As say Bichette gets healthy, as you know, maybe Kirk takes a spot on the roster. He certainly has hit every time we've ever seen him at the big league level, even though he's never played above Dunedin. But that's, you know, that's an interesting option, and it'd be much like Vogelbach and much like VR. Like, I don't know, it'd be hard to do worse than what the Jays catchers are currently doing, at least at the plate, right? So, they have options, and that is probably a thing they like very much that they can do there. But yeah, it's hard to see how Vogelbach and Rowdy coexist for very long.
It seems like too much to love. You know, anything more than a handful is a waste, and the Blue Jays are definitely in that kind of a space.
And especially as you rightly mentioned, because Vlad's in the first base DH mix as well
mm-hmm.
for now. Gonna go back to third next year. Let's go.
You know, I would if that happened, I wouldn't be mad. It seems as though we're obviously skewed by his results, but he does appear in a way to be playing himself into better shape. Now, the fact that he's hitting makes it easier to see and feel that way. But it's not. But
I think so. Yeah. I think and it's not just from playing, too. I mean, he spoke to the media, I think last week, and talked about, you know, working every day or almost every day with their strength and conditioning coach, like going, that's the first thing he does. He goes in, I think it was 45 minutes or an hour he does with him before he goes to, you know, Guillermo Martinez, the hitting coach, and goes to the cages, prepares, you know, look, you know, does game plan kind of stuff about the play, you know. But that's become a big part of his routine since the restart, since they were like, no, you're not playing third base, come back looking like that.
And good on him. The results at the current moment are certainly supporting that as a positive development. Yeah.
And I think they would tell you. I think maybe they said it out loud last year as well. Like they would prefer him to stay at home or not stay at home, to stay in Dunedin with them over the winter. I think that they think that would probably be the best for his conditioning and stuff. Which obviously he has every right to not do that, to, you know, to go home and have a life and whatever. And but one wonders if maybe his experience this year will change his mindset in that regard, and maybe we'll see him.
He's only got one more year making the minimum, so it's time to start thinking about those checks. Think about those checks, Vladdy. Now, you talked about guys, an attitude that seems to suggest, see if we can catch lightning in a bottle. And I would say that the next two transactions the Blue Jays made, acquiring, is it Stripling or Stripling?
I think it's Stripling.
They acquired Ross Stripling from the Dodgers, and they acquired Robbie Ray from the Diamondbacks. Those are definitely buy low guys. I saw that was the headline. Like, Blue Jays get Ross Stripling from the Dodgers. And I was like, oh, on purpose? Because he has not been good at all. this
no,
year.
No, he is not.
So I did what every self-respecting baseball analyst would do. I went to his StatCast page, and the thing that jumped out was like all of his numbers are abysmal, like his average exit velocity, average weighted on base, strikeout rate, this rate, all terrible, blue, like bottom of the barrel. But fastball spin rate, slider spin rate, high. Thumbs up. And that's why he's a Blue Jay. I don't think it's any more complicated than that. He was was pretty good last year. He's had some decent success.
You can't necessarily measure. I mean, the Dodgers have a pretty good ballpark for pitchers, but yeah, I'm looking at his Baseball Savant StatCast page this from last year, and it's quite a lot better. There's some hard reds there, and expected ERA and expected weighted on base. 80th percentile, both of those. And I think if you look at the ERAs, obviously that's going to be slightly affected by, say, Dodger Stadium. But, you know, he's been sub-4 ERA for, like, 5 years. Like, he's a pretty good pitcher when he's not pitching in 2020. So, yeah, I think that that's I think we could say exactly the same about Robbie Ray as well. Exactly the same, that he just is completely – lost everything except for that fastball spin rate. I don't know. Stripling has been interesting. He's been a swing man. That's probably not his preferred spot. I know that he was kind of upset. He said, I wrote about this in discussing the trades here on Monday. He spoke on the Athletic's very own podcast about the Dodgers, which I want to say is the Scribes of Summer. Pedro Mora and Andrew McCullough. He was like, oh, it was a win-win to go to the Dodgers. You know, like he was going to stay in the same city, but was going to get a chance to play with Mike Trout and Ohtani. And obviously, you know, the Angels are a wonderful juggernaut of a team, as we've seen this year.
Dear God.
but so he was kind of disappointed when that deal fell apart, which, I mean, if you don't remember, was around the time of the Betts trade to the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. They had one. There was a deal for where Stripling and
Jock Peterson,
Jock Peterson would go to the Angels. That I think Artie Moreno ended up calling off because the Dodgers kept delaying because they were like, oh yeah, getting Mookie Betts over here. we could hold off on this for a little bit. And so he ended up going back to the Dodgers. Did start 7 times for them this year. Wasn't really in the swingman role. Got a chance and then was fucking terrible. So. I do think that there, you know, he's got control left. I think that there's like 2 more years after this one. He's maybe a guy where the Jays are thinking, okay, Hatch and Kay are, you know, it would be nice to like have an impediment to have them to like being forced to have them back in these same roles. Like they'd like them to not give up on starting forever, I think. And that's probably the right thing to do. So if you have a guy, if you trust Yamaguchi a bit more, if you have Stripling, maybe you don't feel as compelled in 2021 to let them continue in these roles that they've been successful in. And, you know, if there's not a spot in the rotation for them, which there may not be. So I don't know. It's another bullpen arm. I mean, it's like the other guys. It's like, you know, VR, you can look at him and find faults, but he's replacing Brandon Drury and Stripling's replacing, you know, Jacob Waggisbeck. So, you don't have to, the bar's not real set real high, I guess.
No, and I think you again, if you can get these guys right or righter or right enough, they can give you added dimensions. If you're going to run out of every game's a bullpen game, if you get into late September and into October and it's, you know, who are you going to throw out there? And if you have a team, I don't know offhand, a playoff team that might have a lot of big left-handed bats, and then you are the Blue Jays and you're like, hey, we're going to throw Robbie Ray at you. Robbie Ray is going to strike out 30% of the people that he faces. He might walk 20%, which is where he's at this year, which is astounding, truly astounding. I don't think I've ever seen a walk rate that high. But again, these are not normal times. But if the Blue Jays are able to like rein it in and sort of help him figure things out and give him some time and give him some low leverage innings when they're beating up on the Orioles or whoever they would typically play, pummel the Red Sox, for example, then let Robbie Ray get out there and maybe figure it out. And then if that's like an opener type of situation, or okay, we'll give Robbie Ray gets 3 and then Stripling gets 2, and then you're into the meat of the Blue Jays bullpen, which is growing by the day. they have depth, and they have guys that can give you a look and can maybe flummox you if you're a good team looking ahead to the next round. And the next thing you know, well, we lost to Ryu, and now we got to figure out, like, you know, how are we, what are we going to do with this melange of guys that they're just going to heave at us? So
it is true. I mean, the bullpen, I think, I don't know if anybody follows, I know Drew, you do, Josh Howsam, who wrote for BP Toronto for a long time and podcast there, doesn't write enough anymore, but always does great work. He's been tweeting about, you know, what the bullpen looks like, and it's pretty good. Like a bullpen day is like a fucking, he's like, you could have a bullpen day in the playoffs, you know, with your Merriweathers and your Baruckies and Hatches and
Yamaguchis and Dolises and.
Yeah, there's guys there, and just adding to this collection is pretty good. And then, you know, who knows what's going to happen with Jordan Romano, which would be a shame if he is out an extended time. But Ken Giles coming back, and Pearson could end up being in the bullpen mix if they, you know, choose to maybe not unleash him fully and maybe go with when he comes back, because it sounds like he's, you know, on his way. Mm-hmm. I think he was throwing at 90 feet this week.
Ken Giles is close.
Yeah. And yeah, and it's also, you know, just thinking about internally, just the way that, you know, they've obviously got an advanced and robust system. You know, they're not just looking through binders like they used to, right? I mean, these guys are, you know, teams are very cognizant of a lot of data points on players, a lot of scouting stuff, and surely, you know, they're not. I mean, maybe the cost is so low they're just guessing, but I would think that they at least have some sort of idea, like, oh, we should try this with Robbie Ray, we should try this with Stripling and see if we can, you know, like not just like, oh, here we are, let's see how you throw and maybe we can fix it then. Like maybe having an idea already in mind and maybe targeting them in particular because of the low cost and because they think they can fix something. And it's something I think Ben Nicholson-Smith tweeted about it. I wrote about it today. It's something that's worked well for them in 2016, right? When they got Jason Grilley, they got Joaquin Benoit, they got Francisco Liriano, who were all guys having rough years with track records of success. And then they those guys were all really, really useful to them in a team that made the playoffs.
And if I may be so indelicate, when you treat players like goods and services, and you acquire a guy that is not part of your long-term plan and is a free agent at the end of the season, and you have you can dangle, like, we're a competitive club. Maybe you can pitch in the playoffs. Maybe you make an extra check. Maybe you really put it together and show teams what you can do. You can ride those guys hard and put them away wet. Like, you can fuck them up. And be like, we're going to teach you how to throw a cutter, Robbie Ray. We've got this guy in our system who teaches this nasty cutter. And then Robbie Ray's like, this is great. He strikes everybody out for a month. And then he's like, oh my God, I can't lift my arm over my head for the entire winter. But that's not the Blue Jays problem anymore. I would point you to one David Price, perhaps, as a guy that was ridden hard and putting away wet. But, you know, it's kind of the name of the game. I mean, it is a little bit of the human gristle in the meat grinder here, but if you can figure a way out to, like you said, to kind of tweak a thing and maybe try something different and not be as wary of the long-term repercussions without being a dick and without being a shitty person who's like, we're going to fucking use you up and spit you out because you don't say it out loud. Yeah. That's just the part that's understood. But maybe that presents another opportunity if it's, you know, guys they can throw every game, and maybe they can kind of back off some of the, you know, Jordan Romano, which you hope he's okay. But at the same time, he was getting used a ton. So maybe having a couple weeks to cool his heels isn't the worst thing that could have happened. And I do think that when you look at that list, I think, as you mentioned, Joshua tweeted it out. You look at that list, and you've got a lot of like pitchers who have been effective or are currently effective. You got to be like, take a breath and think, whew, tell you what, it's going to be difficult to get all those guys work, keep those guys sharp, make sure you're using all these different players in the right situations to figure out where they kind of sit. I'm glad that Charlie Montoyo is the guy making those decisions for the rest of the season.
I didn't know Charlie Montoyo worked for the fucking high performance department.
So I saw somebody talk about that.
I think he's just following orders. But
that was Gregor, I think. Gregor Chisholm was talking about that today, that there was some befuddlement that they had took Chase Anderson out of the game here on Monday. But then apparently there was a hard cap on like 90 pitches. It was like that was all they were going to.
Yeah, that's what Charlie said after the game. Yeah, yeah.
So you
also Charlie looking like Joe Pesci. Quite a delightful moment.
I'm glad that you appreciated that. Somebody, I can't remember their name offhand. They tagged us and they were like, yo, check this out. Usually as a rule, I don't engage with that. I'm like, no, you don't need to be tapping me on my shoulder. If it's good, I'll come around to it. But sometimes, you know, you see a winner and you got to hit it. You got to get the, so kudos to you and kudos to whoever it was that, that sent that our way. I appreciate it. So that's kind of it, I guess, in terms of transactions. Again, we've kind of lumped Robbie Ray and Ross Stripling together, which is unfair to Robbie Ray, who was bananas a couple of years ago. Like Cy Young votes. Absolutely insane how good he was, striking out the entire world, which offsets all of the – well, his whip this season is 2, for what that's worth. But yeah, he was great. Okay, maybe greatest. He had a 4.5-5 win year. Playing for
it's pretty Arizona. Good.
He didn't start that much, I guess. But
I mean, Stripling's been a couple win player the last 2 years, I must say. Though his 3.2 home runs per 9 innings this year is not ideal.
Yeah, it's not what you want.
Also strikeouts way down and walks up. But you know.
Was it you that was observing about the number all these different Blue Jays pitchers they have that are all like crazy homer prone guys and they just don't seem to really care that much?
I was, yeah. I mean, yeah, since 2018, I think there's only like 140 guys who had 200 innings, but the Jays have like 4 of them in the bottom 45 or so in terms of like home runs per 9, like Anderson, Roark, Stripling now and Ray.
If there's a
new market inefficiency,
if there's one good way to endear yourself to the local 9 and there's the local fans, it's bring in a guy who gives up a lot of home runs. Fans just love it. You love to see it, especially if it's a guy who walks a lot of people and gives up home runs. That's when you're really cooking with gas. When you got a guy who's going to walk the ballpark and then groove. I mean, it doesn't matter how good your stuff is. As we saw kind of with Nate Pearson when he was struggling and battling injury a little bit. It's no way to live. Hey, what's up, guys? Be right back with a little bit more Birds All Day. But right now, let's take a brief pause before we do move on. Ross Atkins, under the guidance, or under the supervision, I don't even know, remember Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins is the general manager. Let him wear it. Let him get the credit. They were like, let's make the team better. But they weren't going to make the future team worse, which I can't think of a better strategy at this time than given their situation. That maybe they can string a couple wins together. Maybe they're going to go out there. They're going to give a good team a really hard time, hopefully, in October. They don't again. We were I'm on the record in this podcast weeks ago, not even that many weeks ago, being like they're horseshit. Because they're not a great team, but at this point they're good enough. And if they're trying to make them better, and if the things can click, like you said, if just trying to throw it against the wall and see what sticks, see if they can catch lightning in a bottle. You know, they're seeing some the lightning in the bottle right now. Looks like Randall Grichuk and Teoscar Hernandez, which again, those two players may have worn the patience thin of a lot of fans, but now you're seeing why. Right? Why they gambled and why they slow play and why they drag their heels on bringing in the next, you know, the next new thing, the next post type sleeper or the guy who's going to solve the problems. Because, you know, talented players, sometimes it just takes time. Sometimes it takes time. It takes some lessons. It takes some player development. It takes, if it's Randall Grichuk learning about, you know, letting it get deep. Like that was, I think you mentioned that last time we recorded one of these, and Grichuk have it turning in just way better at bats. And then Teoscar Hernandez magically turning into fucking Barry Bonds and throwing piss routes from right field to gun some clown Oriole up by 20 feet, getting important base hits, game winning walk off singles and hitting home runs for days, turning into the player that no one believed he could be except for one man.
Buck Martinez.
And me. This has been ground zero for Teoscar, for Mr. Seeds.
It really has.
So it's great to see.
Speaking of Buck, though, like he's talking about the Teoscar has adopted some of like a Bichette's toe tap kind of thing. He's been on that recently. He's kind of gotten off the fastballs aren't thrown enough thing, and is on to Teoscar, marveling at him. But to Teoscar's credit, it's been working. I mean, he's a streaky guy, and maybe we've caught him in a streak. But this streak seems to be, dating back a calendar year, even though that's not a lot of baseball was played in that calendar year. But still,
that's all it takes.
And where we are now, and when you were calling them horseshit, and there were all these, the arguments, and especially, the frustration of the fans was when they were like pissing away games, and the bullpen wasn't necessarily being managed as well as a lot of people, I think, thought, and all that. And I think that Charlie Montoya was like, oh, player development in the big leagues, and there were all the mental mistakes, and those have really tightened up well. But this is why. It's because at the time, it's like, no, but they should be able to, like, this horseshit American League, they should be able to get to eighth, and they're showing that they absolutely can, which is why it was so frustrating in the first place that they seemed a little bit cavalier about, like, well, we didn't have high expectations, so we're not going to change that. But damn it, you should have. And thankfully, their play on the field has sort of forced their hand into, like, and as you said, not mortgaging the future. And like I was saying, it's like a very 2016-esque situation where they're like, we are not trading any more prospects at all. Drew Hutchison, sure, we'll move him, but not, like, no real prospects. But we got to get better. So how about a bunch of guys who we hope and think we can maybe fix who are just having awful years? I think you would be hard pressed for it to work out as well as it did in 2016 because, Liriano pitched his ass off. Benoit was really good. Grilly was really good for a while until that kind of, faded away a bit. You're probably not going to get that out of these guys, but you got enough of these guys that, you get something closer to their regular performance out of a couple of them. You've done really well. I think Nick Ashburn, who we've had on the show, I kind of cribbed this a little bit in my piece, said that I think of the four guys of the excluding Walker because he only pitched one inning last year, all the other guys I think were worth combined like 10 wins last year, which is like, okay, that's, they've been bad this year, but, that's pretty good. Those are useful players if you can get a couple of them to be like that, especially if, Walker looks like probably the best of the bunch.
And the Blue Jays didn't make a big splash. They didn't trade for Lance Lynn, although they were apparently sniffing around. They didn't trade for Mike Clevinger, who, of course, went to the Padres. They didn't trade for whatever big name that was bandied about. The Evan Longoria was a name that I kind of floated around. National League is tough. There's so many teams that are in close that you saw a team like the Marlins, who, for example, traded Jonathan Villar, maybe because it wasn't a good fit. But then they acquired Starling Marte, who is having a great season in his first year away from Pittsburgh, playing in Arizona, and now he's a member of the Marlins, which is cool. So makes it maybe a bit more difficult. But the big splash they made in the winter, they signed Hyunjin Ryu. They gave a 33-year-old pitcher like $80 million. What more do you want? You jackals, let them do their work. But because I think that's the issue, right? That making the team better is important. Raising the floor here and there, making marginal upgrades on marginal positions around the diamond is important. But the Blue Jays are only going to go as far as like Vlad and Bo and Kevin Biggio and then these other, the resurgent Teoscar and Randall Grichuk. They're only going to go as far as those guys carry them. They weren't going to bring in a huge piece to supplant any of those guys. Maybe they aren't going to sign Yasiel Puig at this point, which would be a shame because that Puig and Teoscar in the same team probably just burst through television like hearts, like a Care Bear, just amazing awesomeness exploding into your eyeballs right from the screen. So the food is on the table, so as they say. They didn't touch any of their depth. They still have lots of exciting players coming through the pipeline. And they have not deviated from their plan. Hopefully, when the time comes again, by signing Ryu suggested they aren't exactly where Cleveland is, where Cleveland had a great rotation and great players, and they just seem a little bit content to just kind of putter along and like absolutely risk nothing other than maybe training a guy like, you know, they had great years with Kluber, and then I saw Craig Goldstein from Baseball. No, it was Chris Swick from Yahoo was saying that they had a great core and they did nothing with it. They made the World Series, but they never looked to really augment it. They didn't really make it the core better. They traded for Andrew Miller, which was great, and that he completely destroyed the Blue Jays in 2016, like single-handedly just crushed their souls and made me not want to get out of bed because it was just so like horrific watching him bamboozle the Blue Jays with his insanity. But they never really made the next step. They could have made the team better, and they didn't. And then they've just sort of been like idling ever since. So hopefully the Blue Jays aren't that. We've already seen them sign Ryu. If they can make a good show of things this year, if they can figure things out like with guys who might be around next year, or then they can continue to build and tinker and look at what parts and pieces of their existing core could come and could go, and how they can really build a winner and build a team that can challenge the Yankees and the stupid Rays, who will completely turn over their roster within the next 2 years. And then when the Red Sox figure out what they're going to do, they'll be right back up there again. So it's exciting, if nothing else. Like 2015. I was thinking about that. You made the joke. I talked about David Price's Blue Jays debut, pitched 8 innings, struck out 11, which is like absolutely insane. Give up one home run, and how from the time they traded for David Price or Tulowitzki, the 28th or whatever it was of July, it was like somebody said, every time David Price started, you felt like they were going to win every single game for those entire 2 months, like end of July, August, September. Every game felt like they were going to win because they did. Yeah. They won like 70% of their games for the last 2 months of the season. This isn't that, so it's not going to be as exciting. But they're in a fun place, and I hope that short of like a complete collapse in September, there's not really anything they can do to disappoint at this point. So just like, buckle in, enjoy the ride, see what happens. Hope they get to play against the Rays in the first round and they can fucking piss on their dreams.
That, oh God, please no. I'll give them a chance, please.
If the Blue Jays and the Rays connect it's only a 3-game series.
It's true.
If the Blue Jays and the Rays play 3 games and the Blue Jays win 2 of them, which even the Blue Jays are capable of that, on a neutral site, not even in that godforsaken mausoleum, They had to play somewhere else, in Texas or California. The Blue Jays beat the Rays in a 3-game series and send them home. This will be like, for me, it'll be like winning the World Series. I will be so, so happy. It's not going to happen, but it could. So delicious.
Mwah. I think people would prefer they avoid the Rays. I'm confident. But speaking of people, you mentioned the Jackals. I must say, to their credit and to the credit of the people they're speaking about, I've seen a lot more lately. Like, you know, I was a critic of Shapiro and Atkins, but they're doing a good job. I'm seeing a lot more nice job stuff for them. I mean, it's an easy point to be told that you're doing a good job because the expectations really aren't there yet. It's like, so it's one thing to look ascending and look like you're going to be something good for a while. And then it's another thing to actually put it together and do it. But yeah, I mean, I think credit to them, even though, you know, we can't give them too much credit for just picking up other teams' garbage. But I think it made a lot of sense what they did. I think they made themselves better. I think they have a chance to have made themselves quite a bit better if some of these guys can figure something out, or if, you know, it was just a blip that they were struggling so badly at the start of this season. And yeah, they've got all that wonderful flexibility and years of control going forward. They're in a really, really good spot, even though, as you say, all those damn teams around them in the division are going to make it difficult for them.
So I think that's going to about do it for this edition of Birds All Day. I got a couple things to say. Number one, if there is a hater in the midst, if there is someone who may have uttered the word Shatkins and is now offering a bit of a mea culpa, maybe I was wrong. Maybe you want to point them in the direction of the podcast. Maybe you've got a couple Blue Jays are turning heads. And here you are, the hardcore Blue Jays fan who's been there all along. You say, you know what you got to do? You got to listen to this podcast. It's called Birds All Day. It's on The Athletic. They can subscribe. You can subscribe if this is your first time. If someone's already done that, if someone's already turned your head towards the show, thank you. Welcome to Birds All Day. Subscribe to the show. wherever you listen to your podcast. You don't have to be a subscriber to The Athletic. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Stitcher, on Overcast, wherever. Subscribe to the show. Get it as soon as it goes up. You're right there. Maybe as the Blue Jays keep winning games, they get in this playoff hunt. Maybe we'll see a few more episodes of Birds All Day in a given week. So subscribe, offer a rating if you feel compelled. If this is maybe me compelling you to rate the show, give it a thumbs up or give it whatever rating system, and maybe you leave a review. That would be awesome. If you don't subscribe to The Athletic, I really think you should do that. I think you should subscribe to The Athletic. You can read everything Stoughton writes about the Blue Jays. You can read everything Caitlin writes, everything John Lott writes about the Blue Jays. But you can also read everything everybody writes about every team in the big leagues. You can read about the Raptors as well. You can read about every sport imaginable with some of the best writing talent that there is. Other podcasts as well. So subscribe to The Athletic. Tell them we sent you if you have the opportunity. Subscribe to the show. And that's it. Maybe spread the word. Say, hey, what's up? You want to check this show out? I saw somebody do that today. Some guy who hosts an NFL podcast. That's cool. Welcome. Welcome to the Teoscar Stan show. That's what this is going to be from now on. And the other thing, when you're talking to your friends about the Blue Jays, one thing I want to do that's been a really, on top of this powerful moment that we've talked about off the top of social justice, of like a really unbelievably strange, some ways the moment in our larger culture, so much crazy shit is going on. So many just unbelievable images that are beamed into our phones, that are beamed into our eyes. Hard to believe some of the strife and upheaval we're seeing as all of this stuff is happening, still in the midst of a global pandemic. Famous people who have changed people's lives, people that we don't know, we're mourning, people like Chadwick Boseman, who had a huge impact on countless people's lives. Those movies, they don't mean it a lot to me, but to see the impact that those movies made on other people. So if you have people in your life, people that you care about, people you talk about to the Blue Jays about, people you talk to about whatever, tell them how much they mean to you. Tell them how much you value them in your lives. There was someone I've never met in my life, a guy named Riley Gale. He died this past week. And I've never seen anything like it on my Instagram, on Twitter. Just a guy who played in a thrash metal band from Texas, and he touched so many people's lives. And it really affected me. Again, I've never met him. I've listened to their records a million times. But I heard somebody else on another podcast I listened to that said that to take that time and tell the people that matter to you, tell them that they matter and tell them why and tell them how much you value every interaction you've had with them. So I'm going to take that and I'm going to pay it forward. So I hope that everybody listening to this can take an opportunity to do that with someone who matters to them. Someone you know, someone you don't know, someone who's touched your life in any kind of way. Take that minute and let them know. And then we'll, with them, with us, we'll enjoy meaningful baseball in September, which is all we've ever asked for the last 12 years or 10 years or however long we've been doing this. So his name is Andrew Stoughton. My name is Drew Fairservice. We'll talk to you next time on Birds All Day.